glowing owl retires again to its mostly subterranean life.
This is KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Thresholds. I'm George Ryder. I'm going to return today to one of the themes of this show, which is treating children, and we were all once children, with respect that they are entitled to as human beings, what we need as children, and what we can do as adults so we can actually be in a space where we can do that. We've spoken a lot about corporal punishment, but there's lots of other ways that we treat children with disrespect. My guest today is Rona Renner. Rona is a RN. She's a mother of four, a grandmother of two. She was for 10 years in the Berkeley area, the host of a radio show called Childhood Matters. And she's the author of a book called Is That Me Screaming? A Parent's Guide to Getting Your Kids to Cooperate. Rona, welcome to Thresholds.
Thank you so much, George. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's begin with the title of the book. How did you come to that title?
Well, it's actually, Is That Me Yelling?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said
you
screaming.
You said screaming, but you know, hey, it could be either one, right?
Yes.
But I start off the book talking about how one day when my kids were fighting, I was at the top of the stairs, and I found myself yelling, Karina, stop yelling. And I had one of those aha moments of, wow, I'm such a hypocrite. Here I am yelling at her to stop yelling. And it was both funny and also very revealing that I was still teaching my children things that I didn't want to teach them. And that, of course, the way kids learn is by modeling, you know, what parents do. So it was a good wake-up call for me. And when I was teaching classes about how to yell less, someone came up with that title for me, and I thought, yeah, that's good, because it focuses on reflection. It focuses on an adult thinking about, wow, was that me? Which I think is a great thing to do on a regular basis.
You know, as soon as I heard the title of the book, I immediately thought of the first time I had that experience of, I'm in the middle of yelling. I'm full of self-righteousness. And somewhere, I there's another awareness that's going on. What are you doing? What is this?
That's right.
Is that kind of separation sort of, that kind of awareness, is that kind of critical to overcoming this pattern of responding to difficulties with children by yelling at them?
That's a great question, George, because yes, it is, you know, in a way, through the idea of mindfulness, becoming aware of yourself, we're developing this little observer. And, you know, sometimes we can't catch it soon enough, because when we get angry or frustrated, our more advanced brain kind of disappears and our primitive brain takes over, and we get that fight and flight and adrenaline, and so we're going for it. And that's the primitive brain. But if we, you know, take a few breaths or develop this observing self, I think it's the other part of our brain that kind of is able to sort of step in a little and say, hey, guys, what you doing? You know, you're really losing it. And so, you know, becoming aware is great. You know, catching it in the middle is better than not catching it at all. And with practice, and that's what my book is about a lot, with practice, we can actually work to catch what's going on for us before we lose it and take it out on our kids, who, you know, will absorb it, will feel like they're bad, will, you know, maybe fight back as a reaction. You know, there are so many ways kids react. But, you know, our job is to do our best to respond rather than react.
That gets difficult sometimes.
Yeah. Tell me about it. It does. It's difficult. It's a task that I feel like we can take on, knowing that we're not going to be perfect at it, but the intention of managing our own emotions, I think, is a really worthwhile intention.
And I suspect pretty much everybody who goes into being a parent, they have sort of two things going for them. One is the training that they've had as I mean, they were raised by parents, and that's pretty much probably all they ever saw about parenting. But the other is this wanting to do right by your children. I think that's sort of generic for everybody. There's a kind of tension there when the kind of upbringing that you've had isn't necessarily really functional. Probably wasn't functional for you in many ways. And, you know, my guess is that people who are prone to screaming probably were screamed at as children.
Yeah, that's often the case. And I just want to say, George, that my philosophy is that parents do the best they can. Most of the time, most parents love their children and do the best they can with what they have. So when we look back at our own, how the way we were raised, how our parents raised us, you know, I think it's important to figure out what we thought was right and what we thought wasn't so great. And then in the moment, in the heat of the moment when your child has just, you know, for the third time forgotten to do the dishes that he promised he'd do, you know, we sometimes revert to what we were raised with. So if we were raised by a yeller, we might just easily go to yelling. It might even be a habit for us. Some people go to the opposite extreme. You know, maybe they were raised by someone who was very harsh and out of control and might have hit them or yelled or punished or did things like that, and they promised themselves they weren't going to do that, and maybe even go to the other extreme where they don't set limits and it's hard for them to even guide their children because they're trying so hard not to be that way. So I think the way we were raised influences how we raise our kids, unless, again, we bring in sort of that consciousness. And I think parents do want to do right by their kids, but often don't know how. You might know that you don't want to hit or yell at your kids, but in the moment you don't know what else to do. And I remember when I was teaching classes at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in Richmond, California, some of the parents came to me because Child Protective Services had insisted they go to parenting classes because these parents had been reported as being abusive to their children. And they would come, and sometimes they would really say, I don't want to use the belt. I don't want to hit my child or scream at my child, but I don't know what to do. And I think in our society particularly, and probably in other societies as well, we don't give a whole lot of support to parents. We don't talk about this enough, and we don't support parents to know what to do instead. So that was one of the motivations for my book, is first of all to say, you know, you're not alone, you're not bad, you just need to kind of figure something out here. And if you want to stop yelling, here's what you do. Does that make sense to you, George? Is that
similar?
Yeah. Yeah, because all of us have lost it, I think, as parents. I know I have, and I talk about myself in the book. And I also figured out how to manage my own intensity better and look through the lens of temperament and see, you know, what am I like? What's my child like? And how can I sort of prepare myself for those challenges that we face every day when our child does something or doesn't do something, or when we're really stressed? Because that's a big part of it, George, is the stress parents are under.
Yeah, and the lack of support. I mean, no place to go to deal with the stress, pretty much.
That's right.
You mentioned temperament.
Yeah.
And I know that's a theme in your book, and you actually had were given, I guess, temperament training?
Yes, I was given temperament training. That's right. Kaiser trained me as a temperament specialist. I didn't know what I was getting into, but it sure changed my life. I was very blessed to have gotten trained to help other parents. And, you know, the idea is that we come into the world differently. Some people, you know, have an innate way of being that's more, say, shy, slow to warm up, perhaps lower energy, someone's high energy. For instance, I'm an intense person, so I feel very passionate about things. Other people are very orderly. Some are flexible. So those kinds of things. And what Dr. Chess and Thomas learned back in the 50s, they did a longitudinal study on looking at like 130 families over 30 years, and they saw that there were these 9 traits that seemed to be universal, and that when a parent understood more about a child's temperament traits, they were able to respond to who that child is and in a way prevent some of the meltdowns, prevent some of the power struggles. So, for example, if you know your child is highly sensitive, you know that going to a shopping mall, you know, where it's loud and everything's going on and you're trying to go shopping, to bring that child with you is a setup for a meltdown or a tantrum. You know, especially if you're going to stay for hours. If you have a shy, slow to warm up child, you know that you're going to have to prepare them for that first day of school or the swimming lesson. You know, you're going to work with them because they're not going to necessarily just jump in and feel comfortable. It's about comfort. So learning these things helps parents be a little more, thoughtful about what their child needs, and then also to look at yourself. One example is a parent who's fast adapting is a parent who might get very impatient. I know for me that was some of my problems in raising kids is I would go at a fast pace and my children were not necessarily at that pace. So I needed to learn to become more patient and slow down and breathe. Can you see for yourself, George, in terms of, you know, something about your fit between your temperament and the people in your life?
Yeah, I'm thinking about my son when he was small, 3 or 4. I regarded him as an incompetent adult.
That's not very flattering, is it?
No, no, it's not. I learn fast. I expect to pick up things quickly. He's also very, very bright, but he was much more sort of engaged with things for a while before he moved on. And so that was my that was my take at that time. I mean, I had like most people, I had no experience whatsoever being a parent before I started doing it.
That's the case for most of us, and that's where getting some extra support, some extra help, some education. I mean, some parents have told me just reading the book about temperament and learning about that has made a huge difference. Because, again, our expectations are not always realistic. And that's sometimes the trigger for when we lose it with our kids. You know, we're basing what we think should happen on a child being an adult, you know, and having adult thinking. Like, oh, your 3-year-old should know that you have an important meeting this morning and therefore should hurry up and get ready. You know, first of all, developmentally, 3-year-olds are not interested in the same thing you're interested in, and there could be also a very different temperament shift. So in the book, I ask people to look at their temperament, their child, and see how that might influence why they're yelling. And a lot of the book is about triggers, you know, the idea that we get triggered by things. We can do that with our partner. It's not just with kids, boss, our coworkers. Something they do triggers us. And then we get thoughts in our head that sort of escalate the feelings. You know, I'm frustrated that my coworker, you know, left the area a mess, the conference room a mess. So that's the trigger. But then the thoughts in my head are things like, you know, why did he do that? Why doesn't he care? Why am I the one who has to clean it up? And those thoughts, especially in relationship to our kids, get us all worked up. And that's when we often will blow. And the strategies that I have are to try and catch that and calm down before we respond to our child.
And would you agree that those thoughts are coming from experiences of our own that we had when we were younger and smaller?
They come from that, for sure. They also come from, I think, unmet needs. You know, say I'm a parent who feels like I'm doing too much, And, you know, I feel like, why do I have to clean this up? Why do I have to do this? You know, it could be that I'm imitating the voice of my mother saying the same thing, or it could be that I'm just not real good at delegating or asking for help. And so then I'm feeling resentful, and why doesn't anyone care about me? You know, we all have different things that drive our emotions. I guess that's one way to put it. And so then if I hear myself saying, you know, why doesn't anyone care, then I could actually breathe and relax for a minute and realize, oh, I'm feeling really frustrated, and I'm also feeling like disappointed. Ah, maybe I need to be clear about what I need. So it's asking me, I'm asking people to take a look at what's stressing you out, and then try and see with compassion towards yourself, what is it I need to make this better? And I think in relationship to children, so much of our job is to try and help them learn to problem solve, right? You know, that's what we're doing. And so we both have to sort of problem solve around ourselves and also help our children figure out what's going on. It takes a lot of work, but sure worth it.
We're going to take a short break for traffic and weather. We'll be back in just a minute. We're talking with Rona Renner, who is the author of Is That Me Yelling? A Parent's Guide to Getting Your Kids to Cooperate. And we'll talk more about that point where you're losing it. You have a situation with your child. What do you do there?
Good.
All right. It is not bad on the roads as of yet. However, if you are driving on the Northwest Freeway traveling eastbound at 43rd Street, there's some road debris causing traffic speeds of 30 miles an hour. Also, if you're on the West Sam Houston Tollway traveling northbound at at the Northwest Freeway, there is an accident causing traffic speeds of 40 miles an hour. And also, if you are traveling on the North Loop, traveling around the North Freeway, there is some congestion causing traffic speeds of 30 miles an hour. Now for a look at weather, it is 86 degrees outside, nice and clear for us today. The high today is going to be 88 and the low is going to be 77. Now there is a chance of thunderstorms throughout the rest of the day, and that chance continues into Friday. However, Saturday and Sunday, the beginning of our long weekend, we'll have some thunderstorms rolling through, so just be prepared for that. Now back to thresholds.
So you're at that point where something has happened and has triggered you, and it seems to you as though the problem is in the world, the child, let's say, doing things that are just not acceptable, and you're full of all these feelings. You've read the book, and you understand that this is the point where the action is. What do you do?
Good question. I think the first step always is to notice how your body feels. You know, to try and understand that when I start to get angry or frustrated, you know, my jaw clenches, my fists get tight, to become really familiar with what you feel like physically. And then in my book, I present something that's easy to remember, which is called ABCDE of, you know, being able to not yell. So A is ask yourself in that moment, what am I feeling? Because we want to recognize, oh, I'm feeling really mad right now. I'm angry. So ask yourself what you're feeling. And then the next thing is, what are my escalating thoughts? Okay, I'm feeling really angry, and I just wish my kids would cooperate more and, you know, clean up when I tell them to. So those are your escalating thoughts. And can I just kind of accept that for a minute? Oh, right, I'm really mad at them. And then I breathe, and I take a couple, that's the B, I take a couple of really easy breaths from your belly. And research has shown, there's an organization called sixseconds.org. You know, they say that within 6 seconds of easy breathing, you can lower all of those hormones that are going, your stress hormones and your adrenaline, and you can sort of come back to your senses. So you want to breathe. You want to calm down. So now you're aware that you're frustrated and that you just wish they would cooperate. Now you breathe and calm down. So C is calm down. Maybe you go get a glass of water or spray something, some lavender spray on yourself, you know. And then the D is decide what your child needs. Thinking about your child's temperament, their age, what do they need? Do they need a consequence? Do they need a hug? Do they need redirection? Do they need you to walk away for a minute until you calm down some more? So once you decide what's needed, you could say, okay, guys, we're having a family meeting here. I'm going on strike. I'm not doing dishes every night. You all need to do it. Let's think about how this is going to work. Who's going to do it when? We're putting the chart up on the refrigerator. Either that or we're going to paper plates for a while. You know, whatever it is. But you can have a way to rectify that without yelling and screaming and punishing and making everyone feel on edge with each other. You know, the idea is a little more harmony at home. And then the E of ABCDE is to empathize. You know, sometimes we need to step back and think, oh, right, you know, they had school, they had rehearsal, they had soccer practice. Everyone's exhausted. No wonder the dishes are still in the sink. So part of what we're looking for is some empathy. Behavior has meaning, so try and reflect on that. Now, when you're mad, you know, you have to figure out how to do this kind of quickly. So that does take practice. And the key, when in doubt, start breathing. And don't discipline right then in the moment when you're angry, unless it's an emergency. You know, like you're screaming because your kid is about to run into the street. That's okay. And I think the key there, again, is wait a minute until you've come back to your senses. And as you practice it, it gets easier and easier. If, though, George, if you're the kind of person who thinks it's a good idea not to treat children that way. And I think that's the big debate often is, you know, I was raised, my parents yelled at me, told me what to do, and I just had to listen. And so you have to come to a place where you see that there might be something else needed in disciplining your children that has to do with helping them learn how to resolve conflicts.
When you say the word discipline, it's really fraught with many meanings. And
exactly.
I watched one of your videos on your website, and you said discipline, and by that we mean teaching, as though you expected people to really agree with you, and I'm pretty sure you didn't, but you wanted to put the point out there. What do you mean by discipline?
You know, I really do mean teaching, and, you know, if we look in the dictionary, they often will talk about disciples, you know, trying to teach children how to develop self-discipline. In our society, in our culture, discipline often means either corporal punishment or consequences or, you know, really giving some kind of retribution. For me, it's about teaching socially acceptable skills, ways of being, guidance. And sometimes, you know, discipline does mean having a consequence. You know, in the book I have the four C's of discipline, and breaking it down is, you know, children do need rules. They do need guidance. They do need limits. We want to be the person in charge a lot of the time in terms of knowing what we think is right for our kids. But too often it's mixed up with punishment. And that child just needs a little good discipline. And we know
discipline
what that
meaning
means,
punishment. I said discipline meaning punishment in that case.
Right. That's right. And you know, the flavor of punishment is more about retribution and suffering.
Yes.
And I think that discipline is not about the harder the better. The more you take away, the better. It's about keeping the lines of communication open between you and your child so that you're really clearly telling them what you need. So of the four C's of discipline, the first one is communication. You know, you don't tell a teenager, you know, now don't come home late. You tell them what time they need to be home by, right? And then if they don't follow your rules, there are consequences. But screaming at them...
A consequence is a form of punishment, like you'll be grounded for 3 days or something? Like that.
It could be. I mean, you know, you might call that punishment. I like calling it consequences. Yeah, if I'm speeding and getting a traffic ticket, you know, that is a punishment. It's a consequence. But think about what you're trying to accomplish with the punishment or the consequence. You know, what are you trying to teach your child? Well, if they know now they have to come home on time, you know, maybe they just can't go out the next night. And then you give them another chance. You don't say you're grounded for weeks. Because if it's very harsh, what happens with kids is they tend to then get even. They get back at you or they withdraw. And especially with our preteens and teens, what we don't want is them withdrawing and being afraid to come to you as a parent. I don't think fear is the best way mm-hmm. to teach and to have, you know, a good communication. You know, think about teachers that you've had. Most of the teachers who you highly respect were probably teachers who treated you pretty respectfully.
Yes.
Yes, I know. Right, the ones you were afraid of. Yes. You know, you might have been too scared to learn a lot.
Yeah, I'm a professor. And my students, and I'm teaching graduate students as well as undergraduates, and even in graduate school, students come in really, really frightened to be there, really frightened to learn and to show themselves, to be seen not knowing. And I attribute it to really a whole educational system which mostly intimidates children.
That's right. And harsh discipline has real consequences for kids, just as it does for people of any age. You know, there was a recent study that looked at about 1,000 middle school kids, and they followed them for about 2 years. And they saw that the parents who used harsh verbal discipline, such as yelling, cursing, insults, those kids were more likely to be depressed or have behavior problems. And the study found it was also not effective in getting kids to stop what they were doing, and that it was damaging even to children in homes that were generally warm and loving. So what happens is if you're a good parent and you provide a lot for your kids and you have fun and you feed them, you clothe them, you're generally a good parent, and then you lose it, that stays with kids. It's traumatic enough, you know what I mean? That's what they remember. Not to say that the other stuff doesn't matter. Of course it matters. But the study really suggests that this verbal harshness is very similar to the consequences of corporal punishment.
I would think so. It would creates a barrier between the child and the parent.
That's right. And that's pretty counterproductive. And again, not to make people feel guilty, we have to feel compassion towards ourselves. We do the best we can, but knowing that it's not accomplishing what parents really want means that hopefully parents will work at understanding what to do instead.
What do you do when your child is triggered? What they're presenting to you is not really about, you know, the immediate situation. I don't want to go to sleep, or I don't want to put my shoes on so we can go in a car. But is really there's something earlier that's bothering them. They don't know how to communicate it. They're sort of they're triggered. They're in their sort of describe the earlier stages of our brains. Are presenting to you stuff that doesn't really make sense in the present. So how do you deal with that?
You know, again, depending on the circumstance, but one general rule of thumb that I have, you know, attempted to use myself and counsel parents on is to just be able to stop and accept what's going on. You know, the child comes home from school and they're in a bad mood and they're suddenly picking on their sister and then they knock something over. And, you know, you can say, you know, hey, John, you seem really like, you're having a hard time today. And then he starts crying, and you go, I can see you're really feeling bad. You know, let's go get a glass of milk. You know, sometimes their fuel tank is empty. You know, I see this is hard for you. You know, you can't hit your sister. You can't do those things. It's not okay. That's the rule of the house. But I could also see that something's really going on for you, honey. So let's sit down and have something to eat, and then maybe you could tell me if anyone picked on you today at school. You know, sometimes we use our intuition and we can sense, you know, what it might be, and sometimes we have no idea. But if a person feels like they're being seen and heard and accepted, rather than saying, hey, Johnny, cut it out, you know, you just don't need to be such a brat. You know, there's no way you're going to get to what's going on for a child that way. So you have to be able to be not triggered by your child's emotional state. And again, that's asking a lot of us adults, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, given our own upbringing, yes.
Right, that's right. So kids really help us grow up. And again, the imperfection is there for all of us. We make lots of mistakes. And the tone of my book, I hope, is, from what people tell me, is compassionate. It's not about beating yourself up for those times, you know, things get worse. It's about really trying to understand, okay, what could I have done differently here? You know, how could I have communicated? Is there a way I could have connected differently? Maybe there could have been a consequence that my child could really learn from. And, you know, was there even a choice here? You've got to take a bath now. But, Mommy, I don't want to take a bath now. You know, maybe it's like, okay, you could take it now or in a half hour. Which would you like? You know, that simple choice could prevent the power struggle, perhaps.
You mentioned four C's.
Yes.
We sort of started on communication.
Yes.
What were the others?
So choices. I think kids shouldn't get a gazillion choices. I think it's too much. You know, we don't want to give them choices. Sometimes it's like I said with the bath. You have to take a bath. Do you want it now or later? Homework. Let's think about what's the best time for you to do homework. Sit down with your child now that school has started and take a look at how much homework they have. And the choice could be, look, what's better here? Do you want to play for a while after school and then get started on your homework? Or do you want to get it done and out of the way? You know, when you can work with children around some choices, they feel like they have some say and control of their life. But again, if you give too many choices, you tend to lose them and confuse them. The other C is consequences. I believe strongly that parents should spend time to establish rules, and if you have a partner or a spouse, you need to talk together about what you think the rules are, because when one of you says you could watch as much TV as you want and the other one says only an hour, the kid's going to be pretty confused and kind of play the parents off each other. So develop those family rules, figure out what the consequences are that make sense, and, you know, talk to your kids about the consequences. You know, keep them accountable, but have it be age-appropriate and not too harsh. More doesn't make it better. And then the last C is connection. A lot of kids miss having one-on-one time with their parents. With all the electronics out there these days and so many choices of things to do, there isn't always a lot of downtime for just playing and being together. Parents are working hard. Think about, when was the last time I had one-on-one time with each child? It could be going out to breakfast. It could be taking a hike. Be curious about your children's feelings and thoughts. And also don't hold a grudge. If you're really mad at your kid for doing something, figure out how you're going to let that go so that you reconnect. And again, I talk about that more in the book. But children really love their parents and want that kind of connection with them, even teenagers.
Yeah, and need it. It's absolutely essential.
And need it. It's part of their nutrition, you know?
Yes.
And the truth is, most parents tell me that if they spend like even 20 minutes one-on-one time with one of their kids, they suddenly remember the things they love about the child. especially when it's not a lot, you know, when there's not a lot of sibling arguing going on, when it's just one kid and one parent, they sort of reconnect with that essential nature of a child and enjoy them. So I think those four seeds are oversimplifying things, but they're a good guideline for people.
We're going to take another short break for traffic and weather. We're speaking with Rona Renner, who's the author of Is That Me Yelling? A Parent's Guide to Getting Your Kids to Cooperate. We'll be back in just a moment. Roxy, how are we doing out there?
Okay, we are doing quite well as of right now. However, if you're on the Northwest Freeway traveling eastbound at 43rd Street, there's some road debris causing traffic speeds of 30 miles an hour. Also, if you're on the West Sam Houston Tollway traveling northbound at the Northwest Freeway, there's an accident causing traffic speeds of 30 miles an hour. Also, if you're on the West Sam Houston Tollway traveling southbound after South Sam Plaza, there is something on the road which has not affected traffic yet. However, just be careful. And also, if you're traveling on the West Park Tollway traveling eastbound at Gessner Road, there is a stall causing traffic speeds of 30 miles an hour. Also, if you're traveling on the Gulf Freeway traveling inbound or outbound within the 610 loop, there's some congestion causing traffic speeds of 20 miles an hour. Now for a look at weather. It is 87 degrees outside. The high today is going to be 88, and it is nice and clear. However, there is a chance of thunderstorms throughout the rest of our day, and that chance continues into Friday. However, on our nice long weekend on Saturday and Sunday, there is some thunderstorms expected to roll in, so just be prepared for that. Now back to thresholds.
This is a call-in show, and let me invite those of you who are listening, parents, grandparents, children, to call in, 713-526-5738. If you'd like to make a comment, ask a question, we'd be glad to hear from you. Rona, suppose you lose it. You didn't catch it in time. You've just demonstrated very clearly what you don't want to do. Two questions. Well, first question: Do you apologize to the children?
I love that you asked that, because I was just looking in my book and saying, oh, I don't want to forget to mention apologies. So I have a formula that I took from another book, The Power of Apology. And I think it's really important for us to model that for our kids. You know, if we look at world peace, you know, part of the problem we have is people get into this power struggle, and then, you know, people don't know how or are hesitant to apologize for their mistakes. And so I think it's very helpful. You know, you just screamed at your kid, you were in the car, you were stressed from work, they really weren't doing anything so bad, you blew it, you scared them, they're crying. You know, pull over, or when you get in the house, you know, catch your breath, take a glass of water, and then you could say, you know, I'm really sorry for what happened. And a sincere apology includes regret, responsibility, and remedy. So you're regretting, I'm so sorry, I yelled, I lost it. That was a lousy thing to do on our way home from school. I know it made you feel bad. You're taking the responsibility. You know, I had a hard day, but it's still no reason to yell at you guys. I'm really sorry for that. And the remedy might be, you know, tomorrow when I pick you up, I'm going to be sure we take a little time first to play before we all get in the car, because that might make it easier for all of us. You know, something simple like that. Don't need to go on and on. Don't need to do, you know, pound your fists on your chest, mea culpa, I did something terrible. The thing not to do is not to then add, but you know, you kids, if you would just pay attention and calm down, I wouldn't have to yell at you.
Right.
So you really want to take responsibility, keep it simple, and talk about, you know, what you could possibly do in the future to make it better. Do you agree with that?
Yeah,
Good. Just checking out. You're a professor. You know, I just want to check out.
I'm a professor of physics.
There you go. So, I think apology. And if you find you're apologizing a lot, then you really, again, need to step back and say, wow, I am having trouble managing my feelings. When was the last time I went for a run? I went out on a date with my partner or my friend. When was the last time I got enough sleep? When was the last time I ate? You know, when was the last time I went for a checkup? You know, I want to say that to men in particular. Men tend to forget to go get checkups and see how their blood pressure is doing and how their health is. You know, that self-care is such a key piece to yelling less. Again, because of the stress people are under.
Yeah. You need to be able to love yourself in order to be able to love the children.
Yeah, and to really physically sometimes take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've worked with people who get to see that, you know, they're so exhausted, they're not sleeping enough, and their fuse is short. And again, their children are suffering the consequences of that. And really our goal when we love our kids is to try and help them have a good life. They're going to have problems. We're going to help them solve them. Things happen all the time. But we don't need to be the cause of their fear and pain and suffering as much as we can help it.
So look to the context of your own life for what's going on with you.
Yes, what am I missing? You know, I remember when we had kids around the house a lot and, you know, things would be busy. I would get irritable, and then I realized, you know, when was the last time my husband and I, you know, forget about sex, but just, like, you know, had a chance to hug each other? You know, it's like it could be just that nurturing, you know, contact. And when that would happen, things got easier. Now, if you're a single parent, you may be really playing the role of mom and dad, working really hard, and that's where you have to say, how can I call on my village to help me out so I can get a night off? And I think, you know, having been a single parent for a couple of years, you know, with two young children, I know that that's a real challenging time. I do mention it in the book and talk about those kind of special circumstances, and I think, you know, single parenting is one of those that, you're going to be triggered more just because you're working so hard.
We do have a caller on the line.
Good. Oh.
Hi, Paul. You're on the air now.
Oh, hi. Just a very interesting show today. Just wanted to mention I'm a step-parent and a grandparent, and my observation is, having been a kid myself, kids are naturally mischievous and disobedient, which can add to the stress of the parenting job or responsibility, duty. And so kids, in my opinion, have to be made to obey. I was made to obey. I was naturally disobedient. I was naturally mischievous. So I had to be made to, train to, and punish for being disobedient. So I think a lot of time kids don't understand. They have to be taught that, okay, you need to do what mommy and daddy say, you know, the first time. And you need to be quiet in the car. You need to be quiet around the house. All the time is not playtime. Everywhere is not, you know, the city park.
That's right.
So kids have to be channeled into obedience, because number one is the parents, not the kids. Children are not small adults. And
that's
loose
right.
parenting, loose morals, loose language, loose behavior, when it's tolerated, the children get the wrong message. If the parent is the friend and the friend all of a sudden has to tell the kid what to do, well, the kid doesn't have to do what their friend tells them to do. So the demarcation between parent and child, that line must be kept clear and uncrossed.
I'm sorry, sir. What's your name?
First name, Paul.
Paul. You know, Paul, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, that we are the adults and we're here to teach our kids. It's just the whole idea of values, about, you know, how you define obey and what the means are. And I think that may be where there's some difference. You know, I work with a lot of parents who were trained to obey with, you know, real strict corporal punishment or yelling, and and with mixed results. You know, sometimes the results are I will obey and then I will get really sneaky behind my parents' back and do whatever I want. And sometimes the result is, okay, my dad, you know, scared me, I'm behaving and I'm good. So I think it's up to every family, because it's up to you, it's not up to me, to decide what your values are, what you want to teach a child. You know, do I want to teach them kindness, respect, cooperation? You know, so it's not just do what the parent says, but it's also a lot of other values. And then figure out what's the best way to teach that. And
well,
I think we're all so different in our values that we have to be respectful of each other.
Well, that's true, and the children have to be taught respect. They have to be taught obedience, and they
that's
have
right.
to be
they
taught.
They learn it by you. They learn respect from you.
Exactly. Exactly.
How you're
they
respectful
have
to them as well, right?
Well, you have to respect them by teaching them, by channeling them, by supervising them,
right?
Constantly, and not giving them too much freedom, not being too strict. So there's a delicate balance. You have to
there's
finesse.
There's a balance,
but
man. It's sure a balance, and you know, there's no set formula. You just got to really think hard about what you're
doing. The parent is the parent, and the child is the child. And so what is a child's place? If a child doesn't know his or her place, then they don't know when they're out of line, out of pockets, out of bounds.
Right. You know,
so
Paul,
there
it's
comes
so
the reminder.
It's so different for all of us. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot from the parents I work with, and I've learned to respect differences based on culture, where people were born, how they were raised. All I'm trying to say is spend that time thinking as a parent what you're trying to do rather than reacting out of your own frustration and anger.
That's
and
true.
I have a feeling you agree with me on that.
I do agree with you. Some of us, some people, some kids live in high-risk environments where
yes.
safety is a bigger priority. They don't have a yard. They don't have a garage. They
right.
don't have their own playroom. A lot of them are trapped in apartments and housing
That's
projects,
right.
and so safety is a concern. And so if the kid is not trained to obey, taught to obey, made to obey, they could be at their own safety risk, and, of course, the parent is responsible. So with responsibility comes the authority, and the kids have to be made to, taught to, or however, to respect that authority and to obey that authority, because
right, but
they
don't
have
forget,
to
Paul, all,
mm-hmm.
while you're doing that, don't forget that they have social emotional needs at the same time. And I think that's the key, is that yes, you're going to teach them these things, but let's keep in mind they also have to feel okay to come to you and say, Daddy, I was bullied today, and I need your help. That's the piece I want to stress, is making sure we also have that line of communication open with our kids. Because our kids, you know, are in tough situations.
They are.
We live in a world that sure ain't safe a lot of the time. And I appreciate everything you're saying. So.
Well, they're chronically distracted with digital media. It's a different era that they're coming up in. And so they
yeah.
have to be continually refocused. They have to be continually reminded and redirected.
Yep.
And they have to also feel emotionally, they have to be emotionally safe with the parent to come to
right.
them and say, somebody touched me or somebody, you know, dogged me out today. Because
right.
they have to know that it's like police, the motto of the police department, to protect and to serve. So that's our job, to protect them, which may not always be fun for them. You know, we can't be the, you know, simply facilitating fun and their frivolousness. We also have to protect them and also serve them to the extent that we're, the whole thing of parenting that I can see is about preparation. So
yeah.
what are we preparing them
we
for?
We want them to be a certain kind of human being. And I want kids to grow up to be human beings who can prevent issues and solve problems without violence. That's what I want. I would
well,
love
they have
to
have,
see
be
that.
Taught integrity. Their word needs to mean something. They have to be taught that to tell the truth is better than to lie. They
right.
have to be taught
those
that.
Those are your values. That's right,
it's,
Paul.
It's, yeah, well, it's preparation. And it's an old saying that if you spoil your children, they will despise you. And we see too many cases of children turning on their parents violently. I worked in the mental health field for 5 years. I worked on adolescent units. And I've seen situations where the parents were afraid of the child. Well,
yeah.
in my generation, the child was afraid of the parent,
right.
and I think it turned out a better product. So
well,
it's about preparation.
I'm not going to generalize on that. So I'm going to agree up to a point. I think we get into trouble when we generalize and say it's a better product, because I see the whole range. I see wonderful, fabulous kids who are working for social justice now, who came from certain environments. So let's not generalize, but I think that we all have to reflect on our own families and our own values, and hopefully model, not only for our kids, but maybe for our neighbors.
That's
maybe
true.
For other parents.
And we can't be afraid to tell our parents, tell our children no.
We
people,
can't be
many
afraid.
Parents are afraid to tell them no, but
that's
they're
going
right. to get no when they grow up. So we need to prepare them to hear no. We need to prepare them to hear that failure and frustration is a part
that's
of life,
right.
that they're not going to get everything they want all the time, everywhere,
you're
from
right.
everyone. And so
that's
kids
right.
are just, we see many cases, kids are just out of control, really,
absolutely.
And the parents seem to be at a loss for what to do. They're afraid. You got CPS that can come into your life. You got other parents who want you to raise your kids the way they raise their parents. Oh, let them do this, let them do this, just let them. And we see the kids just wayward and out of control in many cases, and they create discipline problems in school, which brings other problems to other children in the classroom, and so on and so forth. So at home is where it starts and needs to be reinforced.
You for
thank
you're
you.
Saying, and I hear your passion, Paul. Thank you so much.
And I need to interject, however. Paul, please don't leave the line quite yet. I had a question for you. Too late. I don't think children are naturally disobedient.
I don't either. I think they're naturally exploratory. I think they... I agree with you, George, that, you know, children are just learning about the world. They're learning about themselves and the world. They don't know what's right or wrong when they're young, right?
And what's right or wrong to some extent is arbitrary and is being imposed upon them.
That's right.
But what they certainly need is connection with you. They need it in order to survive. It's wired into us. And so children who were sort of wired to be disobedient...
That's right.
And I,
you know, something I love about kids is their curiosity. You know, and sometimes disobedience, and that's where it gets so tricky. And I was trying to say to Paul that it's really about your own values. I mean, when I look at children growing up in other cultures, you know, I lived in Africa for a while, and there was a sense of letting children explore,
yes.
and having you know, very little fear and punishment, but real clear guidance. And so a lot really depends. Paul brought up a good point, though, George, about, like, where you're living and whether kids have to be quiet because they live in an apartment building, you know, and it's not safe to play outside. All those things affect how you're going to raise your kids.
But you want that to be internalized. You want them to get what's going on and how come they need to do that rather than to do it because they're afraid.
I think so too. I don't think fear is the key component. I think what happens is parents, I think one of the things he was saying is the parents go to the opposite extreme and become so hands off that children aren't getting the attention and love and guidance they need. And I think that's a mistake as well. But, you know, if you watch children, you see that they actually want to do well. They want to learn. They, you know, they really are loving. And I think we need to just mold that a little bit. It's like they're, the, you know, we have to help mold it a little bit so that we keep them safe and we help them learn how to be kind, respectful people.
We, actually, I think they're born with kindness too. But
I do too.
There's another caller on the line. Let's go.
Yeah.
I can't quite see your name. Kim? Tim?
Yes, I'm here. Are you there?
Yes, you're on the air.
All right. Just to give you a brief, I'm at work, and I've been listening. I listen every day. All right. Emotional moments. I am 64 years old. I had a daughter when I was 21, so she's now 43 almost, and I now have a new daughter who will be 12 in December. And all of this is exceedingly important to me. And I apologize for my emotionalness right now. I did not.
Not at all. It does you. It does you honor.
Okay, but just let me take a second. what I truly understand is that, and I believe the gentleman earlier than me, who was a caller, said something about children. I may have misheard him, but I think I heard him say that children are not small adults. And I would disagree with that if that is what he said. Because children are exactly just young human beings. And it yes. is our job to make sure that they grow into, hopefully, functional human beings who understand this world. I do not do a good job, and I do the yelling. And, yeah, it's crazy. So, see many Christmas. I did not mean to get all crazy, but I just don't know what to do about people who do not seem to understand that we are in charge of what our future is. We are in charge of making sure that our children, the children whom we come in contact with on a daily basis, understand the importance of communication.
Yeah.
And, okay, I think I said what I had to say.
Did you want to say something first, George?
Yeah. Tim's concern for doing the right thing by his children is just completely manifest. This feeling that you have to somehow force them into being what they need to be.
No forcedness.
Oh, okay.
No forcedness. No forcedness at all. It is an openness that I try to do. And I find myself going into that yelling place where, the author of the book, and I am sorry, ma'am, I don't remember your name.
That's but, okay. It's Rona.
I find myself doing the same thing. Like, I'm yelling at you to do what I don't want you to do.
Right.
And it doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what's beautiful about what I think you're saying. I couldn't hear it all. But I think what you're saying is you realize that your intention and your love and your desire to do the right thing is there, but because of whatever reasons, your own background, your own stuff, you can't always do what you wish you could do. And you're not alone. That's what I want to say, is you're not alone, and it's beautiful that you can recognize that. You can get my book, Is That Me Yelling? And it might really give you support.
Well, I will continue to try to do my very best.
And let me add also that tears are a healing mechanism for children and for large people.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you for your call. It's really touching.
We've been talking with Rona Renner, author of Is That Me Yelling? Rona, what's your website?
NurseRona.com, NURSERONA.com.
Thanks for being with us, Rona. We'll be back next week. Coming up next is Jim Hightower, followed by the local news. I'm George Ryder. This has been Thresholds. Take care and have fun.
Thank you, George.
Theater Suburbia presents Always a Bridesmaid by Jones, Hope, and Wooten. This comedic romp runs September 12th through October 11th. Four friends have sworn to keep the promise they made on the night of their senior prom, to be in each other's weddings no matter what. More than 30 years later, these Southern friends for life are still making the long walk for each other, determined to honor that vow. Theater Suburbia, Northwest Houston's longest-running all-volunteer playhouse, is located at 4106 Way Out West Drive. You can call 713-682-3525 for reservations or visit theatersuburbia.org for more information. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. We've got each other's arms.
Oh, yeah. Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Participating in your company's matching gift program is easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1. Make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2. Contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Step 3.